presenting here today. So this training is being recorded and will be offered on demand through Cluin for those not able to join us live here today. You can use the Q&A box at the bottom of the Zoom webinar to ask questions, make comments, or report any technical problems that you have at any time during today's training. We'll have a question. This is a roundtable, so we'll be taking live questions throughout the length of the training. And there will also be slides to accompany some of the pre-prepared questions and topics that our trainers have for today. For those interested in receiving certificates of completion, they will be available upon the completion of the feedback form at the end of the training. You can find the feedback form on the Cluin training page that brought you here today. Once you complete the form, you click a box to certify that you participated, and a certificate will be emailed to you. On behalf of the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, I would like to welcome you all to today's training, ITRC Environmental Data Management Roundtable. My name is Devin Sechkar. I'm your moderator today from Arlington, Virginia. This training is an introduction to the ITRC online resources on environmental data management, produced by ITRC in 2022. Today's training is sponsored by the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, or the ITRC, and is hosted by the U.S. EPA Cleanup Information Network, also known as Cluin. The Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council is a program of the Environmental Council of States. ITRC is a state-led organization composed with members from state agencies, federal government, the private sector, academia, and community stakeholders. ITRC members participate in technical teams which produce tools, resources, and training courses such as the one you're participating on today. If you would like to be a part of ITRC, we encourage you to visit our website to learn more about our organization. The full ITRC disclaimer is available on our website as well. If you do plan to use any ITRC materials, we ask that you review that policy and make sure to credit ITRC accordingly. ITRC is partially funded by the U.S. government. ITRC nor the U.S. government warranty the material nor endorse any specific products. So on slide 4, I have the pleasure of introducing our trainers today. All of them have served as members of the environmental data management team and have volunteered to support this training. I am going to pass it off to Megan Eschbach from ERM to moderate this roundtable discussion.
Thanks, Devin. Good morning or afternoon, everyone, depending on where you're sitting. Our group today has several years' experience in the environmental industry, and for more information on each of our panelists, you can visit the roundtable description on the Cluin website. I do want to highlight, if you want to go to the next slide, Devin, that this roundtable discussion is the third that we have planned for the ITRC Environmental Data Management Best Practices team. Recordings of the previous roundtable discussions can be found on the ITRC website. These roundtables are part of the overall training catalog that also includes a 10-minute overview video, as well as a discussion of traditional ecological knowledge. So thanks again, everyone, for attending today. And we do encourage everyone to check out those previous training recordings. All of these training presentations are based on the documents that the team has been working on for the last 2 years, all of which can be found on the ITRC website. So please go and find that and bookmark the link so you can explore all of that detailed material found there. We'll be discussing today is based on those documents, and we'll be referring to them sort of throughout. The documents are really very extensive and cover a really broad range of topics, as demonstrated during the previous roundtables. So today we're going to focus primarily on the data quality documents. This section provides planning guidance, checklists, and a matrix of data quality dimensions for various types of environmental data. It also includes guidance for reviewing and documenting the quality and usability of a data set and links to helpful state and federal resources and documents. So environmental data is frequently used to make really consequential decisions, and it's hard to make good decisions with bad data. We all know that. So data quality touches on all aspects of environmental data management, and clearly understanding the data quality needs of your project or program is really crucial for making confident environmental decisions. So that's what we'll be talking about today. As we're discussing these topics, please do use the Q&A pod to enter your questions for our panelists. We'll do our best to get to all of them today. So with that said, we'll kind of kick off our discussion here with a pretty generic question of what do we mean when we're talking about data quality?
So the documents provided by ITRC can really help answer this general question in kind of a couple levels. One level is very general and applies to data quality of any type of data in a variety of circumstances. But another level is much more specific and pertains to environmental data, whether that be chemistry, field observations, geology, biology. You know, there's lots of different types, but there is a lot of guidance documents out there around data quality that doesn't address the unique challenges of environmental data. And so these documents are really meant to fill that specific gap.
And the overall topic of data quality can seem to be so broad and even a little nebulous so that it's hard to get a grip on it. But breaking this topic down into several specific aspects of data quality is an effective way to assign concrete and actionable meaning to the term data quality. And we refer to these aspects as data quality dimensions. These dimensions are data integrity, unambiguity, consistency, completeness, and correctness. And the documentation can be considered another data quality dimension that encompasses all of these others. So these concepts or dimensions are general enough that they can apply to almost any type of data or any data set. But the specifics of how to evaluate and ensure data quality in each of these dimensions may differ from one data set to another. But it's for every data set, it's still feasible to ask questions like, are these data unambiguous? Or even more generally, what is an acceptable level of ambiguity for this data set? And similar questions can be asked about consistency and completeness, etc. These questions should be answered in the context of the planned data quality objectives for the program or project or data set.
Yeah, we have a document on the ITR website called Using Data Quality Dimensions to Assess and Manage Data Quality. And this document contains a matrix with examples of these questions for each data quality dimension and for different types of data that are typically handled in an environmental investigation. So shown on the screen is an example from this matrix. The full matrix is quite extensive, so this is just a snippet of it to give you an idea of what it looks like. For example, for sample collection in the project stage, when you've acquired data for this particular activity, the matrix will give you specific things to look at to answer the questions like the ones Dreas mentioned, shown here, for example, for the dimensions, data integrity, unambiguity, and consistency. So the data quality dimensions provide a general answer to the question, what does data quality mean? And their evaluation allows you to develop specific answers for each program or data set. So the dimensions document and the matrix are a really good place to start when you're trying to narrow in on what data quality means for your particular investigation.
So that specificity is really helpful to clarify what data quality is. And there's lots of information about that in the guidance documents, it sounds like. But how do we go about measuring the quality of your data specifically?
Data quality can be measured using the data quality dimensions that we just described. And these are measurable characteristics of data quality, or the items that are in that matrix. So by considering data quality in terms of these specific dimensions, quantitative measurement is practical. For example, you might determine that 5 out of 48 measurements of an analyte have no associated sampling information. That's a data integrity measurement. or you might determine that only 14 out of 15 locations were sampled. That's a complete mismeasure.
Yeah, and I'll just reiterate, you know, what we're talking about here, this data dimensions matrix is just a really great tool. It'll help you be able to relate those data quality dimensions to the project life cycle stages. So what's needed during field data collection, laboratory analysis, data validation, historical data collection, spatial, you know, whatever is going on your project. Each cell of the matrix lists one or more items that should be fulfilled to be able to establish data quality in that dimension at that stage. And conversely, if they're not fulfilled, it's going to give you a measurement of incomplete data quality. The one thing too is to just keep in mind, we have a link up now, I believe, in the chat for y'all. But this matrix was created not necessarily to cover every scenario possible or every possible type of measurement of data quality, but it's giving you the tools to start thinking about data quality in terms of specific dimensions, specifically as they relate to your data quality objectives. And that way it's going to help you to more easily be able to identify what are those attributes for data quality in your own data set.
So you've mentioned that questions around the data quality dimensions should be answered in the context of data quality objectives. Like, there's several different examples of questions that you can ask to evaluate your data quality. So how do you determine what your data quality objectives are so that you can ask those questions?
Yeah, so ideally, every project should have some kind of documented data quality objectives, or DQOs. If you hear us say DQOs, we mean data quality objectives. You know, some projects might have very simple DQOs, while others might have formal 300 plus page documents. If anybody here has ever seen a QAP, you know those can get pretty big and they can be beasts of a document. But you know, you really can't effectively measure data quality without first having a standard to measure against. Most of us aren't out there collecting environmental data for no reason. You know, usually we have a regulatory standard we want to compare our results to. Well, the same thing goes for data quality dimensions. You need to define what those data quality objectives are so you can compare them at the end. If you are out there taking field duplicates to measure precision, for example, you should have a target RPD set that is going to prove with some level of confidence that your data is comparable. If you're out there taking field duplicates without a target RPD, what are you going to do with that data once you have it? You know, you want that data to have some kind of meaning for you. So setting those objectives are really important. You don't want to waste time and money collecting stuff that you're not going to use. So make sure you have an idea of how you want to use it. The data quality overview fact sheet can help you get started with defining your DQOs. And it also includes a bunch of links to state and federal documents that have data quality planning documents that can, you know, help you get started. And you can also use the data quality dimensions document that we mentioned earlier to help you define those DQOs as well.
And identifying DQOs can itself seem to be a challenge. So one approach to developing DQOs is to consider, once again, the data quality dimensions and how they relate to project objectives. And the specifics that are listed in the data quality dimensions matrix can be the foundation of DQO questions, such as, how complete do I need these data to be? How correct do I need the data to be? And it's also important to recognize that constraints on time and funding may prevent the achievement of the very highest levels of data quality in every dimension. So the determination of DQOs should also consider such constraints and identify priorities among those data quality dimensions.
So that makes me think timing of the review of the data quality dimensions and developing what your data quality objectives is important. So there's, especially if there's prioritization that needs to happen. So what is the best time to think about and evaluate these data quality dimensions when you're managing environmental data?
Well, the short answer to that is early and often, but to help think a little more specifically about when is the best time to think about data quality, on the screen now is a figure from the data quality overview document that shows the project and data life cycles together and how information about data quality can be shared between the stages of each. And the data lifecycle, it may look familiar. It was introduced in the earlier ITRC EDM roundtable about data management planning and field sampling. And this figure builds upon that one by adding the project lifecycle stages, plan, execute, and close, and lining those up above the data lifecycle stages. And when they talked about data management planning at the earlier roundtable, they talked about the importance of keeping the end goals in mind, being aware that every project is unique. So I think the value in adding the project lifecycle on the figure is that it shows that during the planning stages, your whole project team, not just the data managers, should be thinking about what data quality is needed for the intended uses of the data. In other words, your data quality objectives or DQOs. Now, I also think it's really important to keep in mind that data quality can mean different things depending on the project and project goals, and also to different people working on or using this data for the same project. In my experience, if you have all of your project team members in the room at the beginning of a project, you will get different answers about what the objectives are or why the project is important. It may be, I need to produce a deliverable by a certain date, or know how well a best management practice is working, or maybe more specifically obtain specific chemistry data for a model.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. And I think if we go back to what that initial question was, when is the best time to start thinking about data quality? The best time really is in that planning stage. So in our data quality overview document, we look at some of what are some of those overarching questions that you need to ask yourself or your project team so that you can better understand what your project needs are and what is the intended use of the data. So who is your audience and why is the data important? So if we take a look at an example of measuring nutrients in the surface water of a lake, your audience could be a community group. They might be looking at determining safe swimming levels. They could be trying to determine some sort of treatment plan, or maybe your audience is a regulatory agency, and then that's going to have maybe a little bit more set criteria in terms of compound lists and methods, detection limits, QC elements, that sort of thing. Or maybe there's a predetermined permit, you know, that you're going to have requirements that you need to meet. As Shauna mentioned earlier, the overview document does go into information on project data quality objectives and also gives some planning links to guidance documents for various states and agencies, including COAPS. And as an additional document to go along with that overview document, kind of in that planning stage, is one that we have for considering what are those questions you need to ask when you're setting up an analytical lab. So it's going to really help to guide you on those considerations so that you ask the right questions up front when you're setting up your lab so that you can meet your project objectives and requirements.
So planning is super important. And we've touched on that in previous roundtable for sure. But once your project planning is sort of complete, what are some things that should be considered from a data quality perspective in that execute stage of your project lifecycle and beyond?
Yeah, so after the planning stage, it's really important to monitor the quality of data throughout the rest of the project lifecycle. You can have the best data management plan in the world, but if it isn't executed properly, you're not going to end up with the quality data that you need. you know, the project managers overseeing the project execution stage, ideally with a good plan. But, you know, things can still go wrong. Have all your plan samples been collected? Are the chains of custody completed correctly by field staff? Are they in line with project requirements? Did the appropriate QC get taken? You know, and then, of course, there's the lab analysis. You know, are there any QC failures? Did you get the reporting limits that you needed? If we look back to Cheryl's example earlier about wanting to know if a lake is safe to swim in, if you have reporting limits that are above your human health criteria because the lab had to dilute that sample for some reason, your data might not now be sensitive enough to answer the question that you set out to answer. So that's really important to keep on track of while your data is coming in. I also think it's really important to keep active communication with all members of your team. You know, with the laboratory, I like to treat the lab like they're a part of my internal project team and keep them aware of requirements and of changes to sampling plans and schedules so they're not left in the dark trying to guess our needs or what we want reported. You know, ultimately, we're all humans performing tasks, and there's a lot of tasks to perform, and, you know, mistakes are going to happen, and we just have to be ready for that imperfection and act as quickly as possible when we do see those issues arise.
And I want to note that in project closing as well, it's important to continue maintaining data quality by ensuring that project documentation is complete and correct and represents what was set forth in the project requirements. It's also important that the data quality history over the project lifecycle is known and documented. So going back to the previous question of when is the best to think about data quality, clearly the plan is important, and the project manager must pay attention to data quality throughout the project lifecycle to help ensure the data meet the project objectives. However, data quality issues may arise during the project lifecycle, and how the data are used may change after the project has closed. And that is why viewing data quality from the data lifecycle perspective is also important. And both planning and documentation are essential to link the project and the data lifecycles.
Okay, so we have a question in the Q&A pod that I think we're going to get a little bit of clarification on, but this discussion sort of leads me to my next question, and then we can circle back to that audience question. Okay, so because you've already defined data quality within the project lifecycle, when do you think about it during the data lifecycle? Can we talk about that difference?
Yeah, thanks, Megan. So as far as timing, the figure shows the project and data lifecycles happening concurrently. And that is true that with the planning, it's important to anticipate data quality needs for both life cycles to the extent possible. But once you get beyond planning, the two life cycles have distinct stages and different times at which the data quality issues need to be addressed. So to contrast between the two, the project lifecycle is typically finite, and the planning focuses on the intended uses of the data for that project. A data lifecycle, it's typically not finite and can continue beyond the project lifecycle. So data generated to meet specific project goals may then be retained long-term, say, as part of a long-term regulatory program or in a public database from which users can access the data long after the projects are completed. You know, for example, for me working in local government, we have a real need to consider how the public may view or use data that may have been collected initially for certain uses, but then may be used or viewed differently in the future. So, planning for a finite project lifecycle or a finite project timeframe, you know, in contrast, the data lifecycle, possibly infinite, it's more broad. So you have to consider these longer term program or secondary data quality requirements. And it can also be more focused and detailed. For example, at each stage, you know, you may need to consider data integration by data managers, things like naming and format conventions, so more specific things like that.
Yeah, to expand a little bit on what Jennifer was saying, if we want to look specifically at the data acquisition and processing stages of the data lifecycle, for example, you know, you might be compiling data from a number of individual projects, maybe various regulatory programs, and you want to combine all of that into a single public-facing water quality dashboard. We would sometimes refer to this as a secondary use of the data, since you're using data in a way that maybe wasn't the initial intent of collecting it. But, you know, you could have a scenario where for, you know, one project you were collecting data and there was an equipment failure and you didn't get to take all of the samples that you were planning. You know, that could have really kind of serious potential consequences on a project level, but on a, you know, secondary use of a large comprehensive dashboard, you know, the quality issues of that are probably negligible because it's just a data point that you don't have. For me, I think the bigger risks with secondary use of data is really on the correctness and the ambiguity of data. You know, you might not want to show data that was rejected on a project level for quality issues. And, you know, you don't want to make incorrect assumptions about ambiguous data, or you might end up comparing data that isn't actually comparable. There is a great case study in our materials that's about USGS compiling nutrient data from multiple sources and how difficult that was due primarily to ambiguous data. I encourage everyone to take a look at that case study because it's a really, really good case study to look at when it comes to ambiguous data, especially nutrient data. But I'll give you a bit of a spoiler. The estimated value of loss or the estimated value loss from unusable data due to data quality issues was in the billions of dollars. And yes, that was billions with a B. You know, sometimes we might not think that certain issue on a project level is really that big of a deal, but we could be severely limiting its secondary use. And in a time when companies and organizations are really starting to see data as a monetary asset, you are decreasing the potential value of that data if it only has a one-time use. So there really is tremendous value in looking at data quality on that, not only that project lifecycle, but beyond the project level on a data lifecycle.
And that case study is a good example because it illustrates how important it is to understand how project situations affect data and data quality so that they can be addressed as they occur and either corrected or documented appropriately. Ideally, data quality issues from both a project and data lifecycle perspective would be adequately considered during project planning, but the times at which those are addressed can be different during the two life cycles. So understanding and evaluating the data quality dimensions can help plan for and mitigate data quality issues that come up at different times. And in further discussion, we may be able to give some examples of specific items or issues that typically need to be addressed during different project and data lifecycle stages. There was a question in the QA pod about what do you do about data gaps? And it's not exactly clear what the questioner may need, but to some extent, I would interpret that data gap as being an issue of data completeness. That is, you somehow don't have the data that you need or you think you need to achieve a particular data quality objective. And the responses to that actually can be varied. It's partly a data quality issue, but it's also how you're going to adapt to that data gap, to that missing data in terms of the project activities. Do you go out and resample to collect missing data? Do you modify the way you do your analyses? So I'm not sure we can give a comprehensive answer to, you know, there's no one single answer to what you do about a data gap, about missing data. But again, the data quality dimension matrix at least provides maybe some clues, a little bit of help with some questions that you can think of and try to address and avoid those kinds of data completeness issues.
That was great. Hopefully that addressed the question that was in the Q&A pod. That was a really thorough discussion. Somebody else put in the Q&A pod asking for the name of the case study that Shauna referred to. There's a whole section in the ITRC documents on the website specifically for case studies. And I think hopefully, Devin, you can find that case study and drop the link in the chat. If not, you can find it in the case study section on the ITRC website. Brian, I saw your hand shoot up. Did you want to add anything else before we move on?
Well, it was just to point out, just to add on a little bit to that missing data situation. Last week, we were at a conference, and there were some very interesting discussions about how to deal with that, even to the point of statistical methods for imputation, for instance, to impute use imputation methods for missing data. But again, just to kind of reiterate what has been said many times, but is worth reiterating, it really does depend on your data quality objectives. If your study, would allow and it sort of makes sense for your data quality objectives to use a method like that to sort of impute that kind of a data and not necessarily have real values, if you have a model that really fits and that works out, great, that's good. But in many cases, that would not sort of meet the muster of what your data quality objectives are. So it really is, as is many of these things, it depends kind of an answer. But again, it just always goes back to what are you defining those data quality objectives and having a plan for how to meet those for whatever situation arises.
Thanks, Brian. Okay, so we've talked a lot about planning and measurements of data quality. And like Shauna mentioned in that case study, it sounds like it can cost a lot of money, billions with a B. So can we talk a little bit about what is the cost of establishing data quality?
Yeah, so I'll take that. I mean, so first of all, you want to remember that there is a cost both for establishing data quality as well as not achieving it. It's really beneficial to approach data quality with more of a quality assurance mindset. So you're proactively considering what are the steps that are needed, you know, upfront and during planning and budgeting, so that you can achieve quality as opposed to reacting to it, because reacting to it can be a much more costly approach. And as we mentioned earlier, assessing and reassessing so that you are continually looking to identify efficiencies or any sort of potential risk or uncertainty throughout the life cycle of the project or your data is really important as well. So if we take an example of an analytical program, for example. So the analytical program itself definitely has a cost, but there's also a cost associated with not clearly communicating the project data requirements. So have you conveyed what are the exact test methods that are needed? What are the exact compounds, detection limits? Have you set up the program with in mind so that you'll have the right data and quality data coming out of the laboratory? So when it comes time to do the evaluation and the validation, you have what you need to be able to approach that. As we mentioned earlier, you want to make sure that you're consistently doing that assessment. For example, if we take the example again of the nutrients, if you go to the lab and you were to just say, hey, I want to run nitrogen, you know, you may get ammonia nitrogen, you may get nitrate, you may get nitrite, you may get nitrate nitrate, you know, lots of variety there. So all of these can cause unusable data, which is much more costly. And you could have reanalysis costs, resampling costs. There are costs associated with resources. You might have staffing costs and equipment usage costs. There's costs for potential reputational damage. Or maybe you're going to go out and collect a data point that's crucial to your data set that you weren't able to get. Understanding data quality cost benefit factors upfront will really allow you to identify what are those cost management strategies that you need so that you can arm yourself with the knowledge and the tools to plan for data quality on your project. As well, it gives you the ability to anticipate what are the risks, identify a contingency plan and how to mitigate those risks. And then finally, there's also a value in being able to speak to data quality costs, especially during budgeting, because budgeting can be frustrating or a challenge. And being able to understand how data quality or a lack of data quality can affect the bottom line can really go a long way when trying to support data efforts and also provide justifications to the data decision makers.
Thanks, Cheryl. We got a question in the Q&A pod. Can you discuss the role that automation can play in the data quality process as a mechanism of cost control?
Yeah, so that's a really, really good question. And I do think automation can really help you with controlling those costs. You know, that's one of the great things about doing all this planning ahead of time is not only should you establish what you want to review, you should be thinking how you're going to review it. You know, what is going to be your process for evaluating the quality of your data? And having a good plan allows you to automate a lot of those processes up front before you ever start getting data in. So, you know I need to check for X, Y, and Z. You know, what can I set up to make that process as quickly or as quick and accurate as possible? And automation can really help with that. You know, I mentioned how we're all fallible humans. Well, we're all going to be fallible humans during the review process as well. So if we can take away some of that potential failure, even from the review process, you know, it's going to be more accurate. It's going to be quicker. It's going to be, you know, it's really going to help everyone out in the long run to try to find ways to automate those things.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say also that the previous roundtable on data exchange addressed this topic, I don't know if I should say extensively, but I think fairly thoroughly. So if you're interested, you might go back and look at that roundtable, which is available on the website. What I will say with regard to costs is, in a sense, yes, of course, automation can reduce costs, but it also shifts costs. That is, if you're going to automate it by developing scripts in whatever your favorite scripting language is, mm-hmm. you're going to incur some costs up front to develop those scripts. And the payoff will come down the line after you apply them repeatedly over and over and over again. The corollary to automation is that you have some sort of standard data formats. It could be a standard database format. It could be a standard EDD format that you're getting in. So automation, of course, works best when you've got those kinds of standard formats that you can apply a standard set of scripts to.
I also want to say that you can't automate everything. I would highly discourage people from, you know, thinking that they can press the button and, you know, everything's going to be taken care for them. You know, these automated tools are only as good as the, you know, experience of the people developing them or making sure that they are set up correctly and they need to have oversight. Things change, you know, the input file is now not, you know, compatible with what you set up. Like, these things need oversight. So don't just think that, oh, it's automated, I don't have to worry about it anymore. Like, those things need oversight and checking as well.
I was just going to add like that. This is another reason when you're in that planning stage, setting up your project, setting up your collection or whatever, that you really understand what your end goal is and what the tools we have in front of us. How can we plan that out? Because that would be the time to really address that, because Dreyas is right. There may be an upfront cost to getting that pulled together, but it may very well outweigh what the back end cost is going to be. So really evaluating that front is so important.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Okay, so we focused a lot on planning, obviously, and quality evaluation, but what if you're a data collector We talked earlier about the importance of involving everyone in your planning for data quality considerations, and that includes the people collecting your field samples, your field staff. So how should field personnel be thinking about data quality?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to think about, that as part of the whole team, field personnel should also be thinking about data quality and reading and following standard operating procedures or SOPs. That's the first step. Everything in the SOP is there for a reason. So as field personnel, you may not fully understand the reason, but environmental chemistry is very complex. There are a lot of variables to manage. So following the SOPs is important to ensure accuracy and consistency when you're sampling. And also communicating and documenting deviations. So again, this goes back to the documentation data quality dimension. You know, when you can't follow the SOP, that's also incredibly important because those factors will be considered later during the usability assessment when the data team has to decide if the data are still representative of site conditions, for example.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of times, like from a project management standpoint, a lot of times people go out into the field and they really have a great understanding of what the project is or what their task is going to be in the field, but not necessarily understanding the domino effect that things that happen at the upfront of the project may have on the back end, or needs on the back end, or what that, how the one affects the other. So just really important to maintain both good training of staff, but then also following those SOPs and keeping in line with them.
That's great. And Dreas mentioned earlier that some of that automation considerations were kind of covered in the previous round table about data exchange. And so here I would add the first roundtable that we had on planning and field data collection touches on some of these aspects of the field data collection. So highly recommend people check out the recordings of the previous roundtables as supporting information to what we're talking about here today. Okay, so I want to get into the topic of data quality reviews a bit more. We tend to hear the term data validation a lot when we're talking about data quality. I know I run into a lot of questions around that term here and people not really understanding what that is. So can we talk a little bit about what is data validation?
Sure. So, you know, I find that as my career progresses, this concept actually has become more confusing and harder to talk about, mostly because I now work on project teams that are much more diverse expertise-wise. You know, I could have programmers and statisticians and chemists on the same project team, and all of us might have different definitions of what data validation is. You know, as a general concept, data validation is just referring to the process of ensuring accuracy and quality of data. You know, lots of people are involved in that. But in the environmental industry, I think it's really important to understand that data validation can have a regulatory component to it. You know, it could be a very defined process. Generally, it's performed by a chemist or specially trained individual that's really familiar with laboratory methods and procedures. You know, there can be different types and levels of analytical data validation. And all of this is you know, kind of covered in the analytical data quality review fact sheet. You know, you don't want to be in a situation where a data manager is asking, was this data validated? And four people say yes, but it's actually not the very specific data validation you needed to do for your regulatory requirement. So again, analytical data quality review fact sheet goes over that. It also explains maybe how validation can differ from verification or usability assessment. And it also goes into data qualifiers, how a lab qualifier might be different from a validation qualifier. How do you use those data qualifiers when doing a usability assessment? And it also has references to state and federal data review documents that you might need to use to do that analytical data quality review. So lots of good stuff in there that I hope people find useful.
Yeah, it's really easy to see how that term can become a source of confusion. So thanks for the clarification on that, Shauna. So as a data user, how do I know what data is appropriate to use?
Well, data usability is a topic that's really closely related to data quality, but it has a slightly different focus. Whereas data quality is generally assessed for a data set in general, data usability is more relevant to specific uses of the data set. For example, data that are suitable for site assessment may not be adequate for a risk assessment, or even vice versa, because data must be collected and organized and quality assessed and ensured before the data can be used. It is common to address questions of data usability after questions of overall data quality. However, all planned data uses should be considered in the planning phase of the project when goals and standards for data quality are established. That is, plan to achieve certain data usability standards and then assess whether or not those standards were met. Again, planning needs to be done from the perspective of both the project lifecycle and the overall data lifecycle. And documentation and the application of standards are ordinarily of most value when assessing whether data are usable for a particular purpose. So standards should establish what levels of data quality should be achieved for a data set as measured on the data quality dimensions. And documentation should affirm the achievement of those standards or describe any deviations from those standards. So assessment and documentation of data quality are essential to evaluating data usability for particular purposes. And I should note that that documentation should be easily accessible to project staff, maybe even in the database, so that everybody can use it appropriately.
Yeah, I also think that understanding data workflows and the status of data is incredibly important and something that too often gets overlooked, I think, by project teams. You know, we have systems now where data is accessible almost in real time, but just because the data is there doesn't necessarily it should be used yet. You know, it needs to go through some kind of review process. Sometimes that's simple and can take a day. Sometimes it's incredibly complex and can take months to review to determine, you know, if it should be used or not. And, you know, using data before it's been reviewed and finalized can lead to a bunch of problems. I think it's totally fine to review preliminary data, and it can be part of your, you know, your review process to compare new data versus, you know, your historical data, for example, to maybe identify potential issues. But everybody just needs to know if the data that they're looking at is draft or final or not. And, you know, just be aware that the data isn't always, you know, final the moment that it's ready or accessible to you. I also highly recommend that people take the time to understand what those little letters are next to their result values. Those are data qualifiers, and, you know, they have meaning. So knowing what those mean, it's really meant to help you understand the quality of your data. That's why those exist. And so, you know, take the time to understand them, use them. Don't just omit them completely because you don't know what they are, or you'll make your chemist and your data managers really sad if you do that.
Yeah, and I guess I'll just reiterate on that. You know, data quality is a continuous process, so it's just not enough to plan well for your data quality, but you need to be constantly assessing and reassessing procedures and project data. If we go back to that nutrient example before that Shauna had mentioned, You know, had there been checks in place at certain stages along the way, perhaps some things could have been caught and rectified earlier on. And this would have avoided a significant amount of cost and unusable data. So in both data lifecycle and project lifecycle, you need to be constantly planning the action, checking the action, and adapting.
This is great. I just want to put a quick reminder to everyone to please enter your questions into the Q&A pod so we can address any additional questions that you guys may have today. There is one, Shauna, maybe you want to speak to this. It would be useful to dispel the fallacy that J qualified data is trace or low concentration data, and that the J qualifier is used for many purposes in data that goes through formal validation. Do you want to talk about that,
Shauna? Yeah, so that is a choice example of kind of maybe how a laboratory qualifier and a validation qualifier can differ. You know, typically in a laboratory environment, J has one very specific meaning of it being a trace detection, whereas a J can mean a lot of different things in from a data validation standpoint. In general, it just means your data is estimated for some reason. In the ITRC data review document or analytical data review document, there is a discussion of reason codes and how, you know, reason codes can also be very useful to help kind of provide additional information as to what specifically a J value might mean if that is too generic for your purposes. So definitely check out the document for some guidance around that. And yes, I get project teams a lot of times arguing with me over my J definition, and I always have to push back on that.
Cheryl, did you want to add something?
Yeah, there? I was just going to say, and there's a great question in the pod right now. Does the panel think that a comprehensive data quality or reason code usability code library is on the horizon for laboratories? and I just, I know, right? So that's exactly, you know, yes, that would be fantastic to have a nice, consistent setup. You know, we all know, like, if you use enough laboratories, right, there's tons and tons of different ways that things are flagged and qualified. So yes, and I could probably refer back to maybe the ISIM paper kind of started to touch on that. I don't know, maybe we could put a link in the chat to that too, that might be helpful.
And I'll just add that consistency is one of the data quality dimensions. Lack of consistency between different laboratories is an issue that you need to consider frequently and address.
As if I think it's on the horizon, I don't know about that. That would probably require all of the regulatory agencies and laboratories to all agree on something. I mean, really, I think where that standardization would come from is from a regulator. Like, if that is established, if a regulator says, hey, these are the codes we want to use, like, that's what we're going to use. And so until there is that kind of regulatory driver, I think it's going to be really hard for the industry to come up with some kind of agreed list. We're all going to want our own. So yeah, I think that's really where that would come from.
But I bet he can get 100% agreement from this panel that it would be fabulous.
That's great. Okay, so maybe getting towards the end of our discussion here, I do want to ask, and we touched on this a little bit in the previous questions, but what if data quality issues do arise? How should a project team go about working to resolve those issues? And when in the project or data lifecycle would you try to address those issues?
Yeah, so I think kind of the key there is that the project team should really work together to resolve those issues. So good communication among all staff. And because the data quality issues can really come up at any stage in the data lifecycle, it's just important to stay vigilant, you know, as Cheryl mentioned, reassessing, you know, stay vigilant to maintain data quality. And although we've spent some time contrasting the two life cycles, the project and data life cycles, the iterative nature of each is something that they have in common. You know, for example, for a project, you know, adaptive management may be led by the project manager, and improvements specifically for data quality, those may result from input from the field staff or data managers. But it's really important that the team work together to ensure that lessons learned are incorporated so you can make continual improvements throughout the lifetime of your data. And, you know, I really liked a point that was made during the data management planning and field sampling roundtable about accommodating that kind of flexibility in your data management plan, you know, which really just reiterated the idea to me that your team can work together to anticipate issues that may arise, and it's almost expected that they will arise. So it's kind of built into the life cycles to communicate and address these data quality issues as they come up.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, totally, since your data needs may change or be refined throughout the project or data life cycles, periodically returning to those initial planning questions that we discussed that are in that overview document are also really, really important. It's definitely much more beneficial to know as soon as possible if your data quality objectives are not being met so you can adjust. If you're only reviewing data quality at the end, you either may not have what you need to be able to meet your data quality objectives or not be able to have enough evidence to prove that they've been met. So it's just really important to always be doing that assessment and always be re-looking throughout the process.
So there's a question in the QA pod. Somebody says, I often receive reports with lab qualifiers of various kinds, but never receive any discussion of data usability from the report authors. And the questioner asks, how would you recommend starting these conversations or determining if they are necessary? And I think the answer goes back to DQOs. You need to see what those DQOs are. And the discussion of data usability, in fact, may involve multiple project staff, chemists, certainly, often statisticians. There are issues of accuracy and completeness and consistency that all need to be considered with respect to qualifiers and their meaning with respect to the intended analyses and products that you're going to produce. So the discussion necessarily isn't just between you and the report authors, but it may involve other members of your team who are going to be using those data.
Yeah, I also think, you know, as a regulator, I know it's really hard to find, you know, time probably to be like, I'm going to establish everything I want to see on this project and write it all down. And here's now, you know, the process that everybody has to follow. But, you know, I like personally, I find projects that have very clear requirements from a regulator, like spelled out, to be much easier to deal with because I know what's expected. And so if you want to see something different, like, and you make that part of the program that people have to provide you with X, Y, and Z, because that's what you need to make your decisions, everything's, you know, you're going to get what you want and what you need for your program a lot more consistently than if you just take whatever's given to you. So I think from, you know, both a regulator standpoint and a industry consultant standpoint, having very clear, defined objectives and what you want to see, how you want to see it, it makes everybody's life so much easier. So I highly encourage you, you know, to define those things and ask for them, you know, to make sure you're getting what you need.
I'll just add one other thing, you know, and I'm not sure exactly what the questioner's circumstances are, but sometimes, you know, when you receive data in reports or otherwise, sometimes depending on the kind of question that you're trying to ask, you'll have to deal with data of either unknown quality or data that is maybe not quite the quality that you're hoping for. And so understanding that and making sure that you have, again, harping back again and again to what your DQOs or your objectives are for the study. Sometimes you can, you know, maybe make lemonade out of some lemons. So the saying goes, right, to be able to take data that maybe isn't necessarily of, you know, it doesn't have the use case to be able to use for certain regulatory needs, but it can be used for planning purposes, for screening purposes, for things like that. It's always important to understand that most data, while it may not have the most, you know, extreme value, there is value in many things that, you know, may not be used for the highest regulatory purpose. So it's sort of a long way of saying just, take everything into consideration and just be aware of again, those objectives and trying to come up with determinations. And it depends, of course. There are a few instances where there are some very straightforward answers, but oftentimes these things are somewhat gray.
This has been a great discussion. Please continue to use the Q&A pod as we have a bit more time here. There's another question here. We plan the project based on the need and requirement following the R&R. At the planning phase, how the technology performance criteria can be correlated with the technology resources needed, which impacts on the data lifecycle. Not sure if I'm getting all of that right. So does somebody want to speak to technology performance criteria?
I think maybe the question might be around how, you know, technology or even methodology, I guess, can change over time, maybe. I guess.
Yeah, how do you account for those changes in technology and the impact on those changes in technology in your planning of data quality?
Yeah, that's, I love to think about PFAS, I think, when it comes to something like this, right? Like the methodology is just constantly changing. And this is where I am going to put in a huge plug for documentation and, you know, just making sure you have the documentation necessary. So if somebody goes back and wants to look at how data was collected for a certain data set, they know, like, oh, well, the lab used this method versus that methodology, and this is how this differs. You know, they use different internal standards, and that can lead to biases in my data. Like, you wouldn't know that if you have no idea what method the lab used. So I always make sure I have very clear documentation of what method was used, and maybe even a copy of the lab SOP, especially for methods that are modified. So you can go back and look at, you know, is this data going to be comparable or not based off of methodology? You know, there's some things that there's no way to kind of avoid it from happening. So just having as much documentation, it goes into that ambiguity, I think, kind of data quality dimension. If your data is too ambiguous where you can't really understand if one thing can be compared to another, that's going to impact your usability of that data.
I'd just like to add that in addition to differences between current methods, if you've worked on a contaminated site with decades of data, there can be differences over time, say in the accuracy of analytical methods. So data quality standards that were good 20 years ago may not be good enough for you now. And you need to be aware that the quality of the data back then isn't necessarily the same as the quality now, and make some decisions maybe about your data analyses to avoid any maybe issues you'd have. Say if you performed a trend analysis and used a data of a very different data quality.
Yeah, that gets to kind of the point of the project lifecycle versus the data lifecycle. That data lifecycle can be a much longer time horizon. And the documentation piece, Shauna, that you touched on, it really talks to like having an audit trail, a paper trail of your methods can be very important. That's all great. Again, if there are any other questions, please put them into the Q&A pod. As we're sort of wrapping up, one thing that I always want to ask people that have been involved in this team is, what do you recommend, or why do you recommend the ITRC documents? What's your key sort of takeaway from the documents that you would really want people to know for their projects? So I guess we'll let each of our panelists answer this question. Jen, if you want to start us off.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Megan. I know it's hard to think of just one key thing. There's so much rich information here about the dimensions and data review and usability and all the things that we've talked about. But I think for me, the key is going back to the overarching questions, you know, when you're starting out your project. So questions like, you know, why is this project important? Why is the project important now? You know, sort of a temporal aspect to it. Who is your audience? You know, what are the intended uses of your data? So, you know, because your project team can have different ideas about those or answers to those questions, I think it's really important to think broadly in the beginning to get started on the right path. And I think kind of a secondary, you know, key point of that is that if you have your so-called, you know, elevator speech about your program or your project that you want to share with management, I think having a really clear idea of your path is also helpful for that.
Yeah, and I can jump in here to add to that, because I agree with everything you said in terms of the planning and asking the right questions, getting your data quality objectives set up correctly in the beginning and understanding how everything will fall from that. And I think another really key piece of what got created here is the data dimensions matrix, because it's a real nice usable tool that you can take and apply to your project. So it's helping you to consider and think about, what are those dimensions that I need to make sure I've addressed on a variety of different types of data? And how does that apply to what I'm doing here? And I think that's really important. And my other, like Jen said, there's just a lot there that I think is really great. But the other real key piece to me is, remember that data quality is, first of all, ongoing and assessing and reassessing consistently, putting those checks in place so that you're catching things along the way and you can make adjustments and you can adapt. And I won't keep going because I could keep going on, but I know other people want to ask.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, these are the documents that I wish I had when I was starting out in my career. I feel like the environmental data management space can feel very lonely sometimes, or very overwhelming, especially if you work for a really small firm or you work for a small municipality, and you might be the only one in your organization doing this. And, you know, where do you go? And so I really, really hope that these materials make you feel less alone and give you some guidance and a place to start when you have these questions, because you know, it's hard learning when you don't have anything to learn from. And so I really hope that these documents can help be a resource there.
So my take on it is that some of you may have experienced this. Data quality is often unappreciated as an overarching issue in a project. There are no data quality issues until they come crashing down on you, right? If you don't recognize upfront and you don't plan for them, data quality issues can be a serious problem for your work. So I think one of the challenges that some people face is communicating to other project staff that there are data quality issues. You go into the field to collect samples. There are SOPs for doing that. So of course, all the information is going to come back perfect because people follow the SOPs. The samples go to the laboratory. The laboratories have well-established standard methods. So of course, the data come back just perfect in the laboratory. How could there be data quality issues? Well, of course, I'm being sarcastic. There are data quality issues all the time. One of the, I think, most potentially valuable pieces of these documents is actually the data quality dimensions matrix as a communication tool. Okay? If you need to explain to somebody who just doesn't get it that there are, you know, a project can be rife with the data quality issues, the data quality dimensions matrix can be helpful. You show it to them and say, look, these are the kinds of things we need to plan for, we need to think about, we need to be ready to address.
Can I jump in really quick just to add? And tying on to what you just said, Drea, that kind of takes you back to that costing piece too, right? Understanding all this on the upfront when you're developing and getting that outline so you can present it to somebody that's a decision maker and that justification. I mean, yeah, maybe you don't visually see data quality, just like you don't visually see insurance, right? But when you pay for it, I mean, you want to apply it, right? Because when you need it, you need it. And that probably came out not exactly how I wanted it to, but I think it's important.
Brian, do you want to add anything else?
Sure. What everybody else said is 100% correct. I was definitely going to mention that I see it really as a communication tool, just like Darius was mentioning. And, I think that is a key thing. And like Shauna said, I wish I had this 5 years ago. But one thing that I'll hit on is that data is really everywhere. If you work in environmental work, you're either dealing with going out and collecting data about the environment or about a study, or you're trying to synthesize data that's maybe already been collected, or you're looking at historical work. Data is everywhere. And so all of these data quality objectives, data quality dimensions, quality it's part of everything. And when we set out to create these documents, I think we wanted to do the best that we could to try to come up with an instruction manual, essentially, for states, organizations, small versus large, who are trying to either take on data management or just do a better job of what their existing data management needs. And I think what we did, we created, this is a very good template. Is it 100% perfect? Does it cover every single component of data management? Of course it does not. But we cover a lot of the pieces. And I encourage everyone, if you haven't already, to check out the documents, check out the other webinars that have been recorded. Check out this one. We've recording this, so come and watch it again and again and again. And reach out for those folks. Again, use these documents and these things as a communication tool for others. But if you're struggling with some of this stuff, reach out to folks. My email address is on the documents. I think there are links where you can reach out to folks. We can connect you with some people who maybe in a similar situation or have been through a situation that you're going through, in the recent past that can provide some help. You are not in this alone. I guess if I could communicate that to folks, that, we're not the biggest group of people, those involved in environmental data management, but we're out there. And I think that one of the things that we definitely learned is we put together this team and rode with it throughout the 2-year process of creating these documents that this topic resonates with a lot of folks. And so we're glad that you were able to listen and check out the documents, and we hope to hear from folks soon.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, I'll just close with, at ERM, we always say that every project is a data project. And so these documents do really apply across the board. And we hope that people find it really useful. So thanks to everyone for participating today. Devin, I can hand it back over to you to close us out, I think.
Yeah, you and Brian did wonderful. Thank you so much. You led right into this. So I just want to reiterate that, we really appreciate everybody being here today. And we really appreciate our trainers for taking the time to not only develop this course, but to answer all of these questions and share this knowledge. We encourage you to review the archived catalog of courses that we have on the Clumen training page. I did send the link for that, as well as the link to the feedback form. So that's just going to be lower on the Clumen training page that brought you here today. And that page also will have the trainers information in terms of bios and contact information as well. If anybody would like any further clarification on any questions or answers, you are more than welcome to email us at itrc@itrcweb.org. And we would be happy to coordinate with our trainers to get anything else answered or clarified. So with that, I would just like to wish everybody a wonderful rest of their day, and we hope to see you in some future ITRC trainings. Thank you, trainers.